I heard you were a champion, so I was thinking
maybe you could give me a few tips.
Give up? There's one for free.
Hello and welcome to episode 103 of Popcorn and Prosecco, a show that's all about talking about movies. I am Perry Nemiroff, and here are my co-hosts, Krista Pachko and Angie Han.
Hello!
So this week we have two new wide releases for you. First up, we're going to talk about Gods of Egypt, and then we're going to roll into Eddie the Eagle. So first up, Gods of Egypt.
So here's the plot synopsis from IMDb of Gods of Egypt. Mortal hero Bek teams with the god Horus in alliance against Set, the merciless god of darkness who has usurped Egypt's throne, plunging the once peaceful and prosperous empire into chaos and conflict.
You should have narrated the movie, not Bek.
Yeah.
Old Bek, who
Old
we never
Bek.
Meet.
So, this movie, we were hoping it would be this year's Jupiter Ascending
we
slash
were.
Winter's Tale. Our hearts, we had high expectations.
We did.
And they were crushed under the foot of a mecha suit.
They were crushed very, like, slowly and half-heartedly.
Or sucked up by a vacuum space worm.
But we're getting ahead of ourselves,
we
guys. Are. So, okay, Gods of Egypt. So you guys might remember Gods of Egypt because a couple of months ago they dropped the character posters and everybody was like, you mean white Gods of Egypt?
It wasn't even just that the cast was white. Like, the whole look was like this weird Lisa Frank fantasy thing. And everyone was just like, what is happening with this movie? And now having seen it, I completely understand why the marketing for this is so weird. It's because
I don't know
how to sell this. Like, yeah, that first of all, it does look that weird. And I don't know how you would sell it. It also does look that cheap.
Yeah. It's really strange because, like, there are elements of this movie that feel like a classic Sword and Sandals pick down to the white cast and everyone having sort of British accents. They're kind of all over the place, and Gerard Butler is just Scottish, because fuck it, be
Gerard
Butler. Yeah, he does what he does, fine. So that was, like, one element, but then they bring in the mecha suits where they're like, the gods can transform. But, like, they don't transform as much as they turned into Tony Stark.
Yeah, they look like a weird, like, Tony Stark, Ant-Man, like,
yeah,
Transformer
except,
hybrid.
Except
all the same sound? Because now they are bringing up other versions. I feel like every one
yes,
of those
they all sound
uses
the
same.
Which
metal
is the same,
thing.
Yeah. Like, little,
but,
like
where they actually
clicks.
Repeat the same exact sound effect.
I would believe that.
And then,
like, there's other elements that are folded in that just are so science. Like, there's a space station in this movie. There's
a space station
that looks like a yacht with actual white sails. It's so confusing. Like, staring at it, my brain just got angry with me because none of it made sense. And, like, I appreciate a postmodern, we're just gonna throw it all in there and see what sticks attitude when it's fun. But that's what's so weird about this movie. It has all these strange elements and refuses to be entertaining throughout. There are parts that are good. But overall, it's willfully uninteresting.
I think, like, so I was hoping that it would be kind of like those other movies, and then it'd be one of those, like, movies that just swings for the fences, and it's just like, space bees, yes, throw them in the pot. But
I love dogs, all that, just go
right,
for it.
Right. But it actually, considering how weird the choices in this movie are, it's surprising how predictable and safe it feels. Like,
yeah.
It feels like the plot seems so standard, you already know where it's going, despite the fact that they make a series of very bizarre choices, starting with the gods in this movie are about 30% taller than regular people, and this is a choice they've made that they decide that they're just going to commit to
Which
and stick with. So every time you see, like, Jaime Lannister and Brenton Thwaites next to each other, one of them is towering over each other, and everyone's like, yeah, this is normal.
The weird thing is that this whole movie looks insanely cheap, yet
yeah.
It never stops throwing a really expensive shot at you. It's like, let's make them super tall for no reason at all.
Yes,
let's
add nothing.
Create 500 CGI environments for no reason, not a reason
at all. Let's have them bleed gold.
Well, that might have had a reason.
We think that's a PG-13 thing where
it's
you can get away with blood when
thing.
It's not red. But, like, it's also just strange. There were so many style elements of this that are so strange because, like, the costumes of the men are very feminine, and not because they're robes, but, like, the cuts of them. Like, Chadwick Boseman has this costume on that I swear to God looks like it should have been in Cinderella on Cate Blanchett. It is so confusing. It's just perplexing.
Maybe that was done to make Set and Horus look stronger.
But even Horus's stuff, like, the way it looks like something, like, Shakira would wear. He has, like, stuff on that, like, the Razorback stuff. I was just like, these are very feminine outfits, and I'm very confused by them. Because it's a very, like, masculine movie that's all about, like, sibling rivalry and fatherhood and domination.
Sibling rivalry?
They're not siblings.
I think we're...
I'm sorry,
which is
right.
Which is a very
confusing
element of the film, is the fact that Gerard Butler is supposed to be, I'm not going to say his name because I'm not going to say it, right? Jamie Lannister from Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
He's supposed to be his uncle. Meanwhile, the two of them look like they could be the same
age.
That doesn't quite work.
Yeah.
Can I talk about the one thing we all did
yes.
though? Okay, so there's one part of this movie where it finally shifts into place, and it is when Chadwick Boseman shows up. He's actually not in it that long, which is disappointing.
Maybe 10 minutes.
Because the movie makes the most sense when he's on screen. So we've been talking about what a weird movie it is and how it doesn't really make sense. Another weird thing about this movie is that even though the plot line is a dead serious fantasy epic, the dialogue is all, like, quippy, but not good quips.
No.
Like, you know, first draft quips. And so none of this works. And then Chadwick Boseman shows up, and I don't know what he does, but he kills it.
Everything
he's a guy
works.
That finally makes it make
it's
sense.
Like, he plays the god of knowledge, and he's a know-it-all, and he can also multiply himself for reasons they don't get into, but I don't care, because more Chadwick Boseman is a good thing. And the scene where they, like, visit him at his library is actually really funny and smart, and you could hear the audience come to life, and it was like all of a sudden we realized we were in a theater with other people during
that
scene.
Is also, the VFX are better, it's more well shot than any other thing, in terms of geography, it's
yeah.
like as you're going
oh,
from
the action
one
scenes
version
are horrible.
To, they're horrible, but that
yeah.
scene in particular had all the elements going for it, including his performance. And then there was another thing that I... Oh, well, just like the nature of that character, too, it lent itself better to the quips. Whereas, you know, when Brendan
yeah.
Waits would throw something at you, it'd be like this ending zinger, and then you'd cut to another scene. So, like, it couldn't really be funny.
Yeah,
and
Brendan
Waits, the scene.
Guys, like, he is human fetch. He is just not happening. We need to stop with this. I can't. He's
You're trying to make human fetch happen. This is the second time I've heard you describe someone that way today.
Yes, because I was saying that, like Charlie Hunnam, this kid is human fetch. It just...
They're trying to make human fetch happen. There's something really weird and meta
about
that.
It's very meta.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I contain multitudes. So,
just like Chadwick Boseman.
Ha! But yeah, like, Brendan Thwaites is just, he's not that charismatic, he's not that interesting, and what's really strange in this movie is that it's supposed to be kind of a buddy movie where you have him and Game of Thrones' Lannister, and they're supposed to be, like, foils to each other, and, like, they don't get along because they're so different, and that's... what the conflict comes from, but they're just the same. So it's actually just very frustrating. They're both deceitful, selfish douchebags that are very confident and arrogant. And so then they're like, I mean, I guess that it's supposed to that they learn, seeing that they're foals in each other, they see that, but it just doesn't make for an interesting chemistry because you're like, you guys are both douchebags and none one of you can pull off a one-liner.
There's like no nuance to them either because so many things happen over the course of the movie that should make their personalities waver or like show just a little bit of emotion, and you really never get that.
No.
Ever. And big things happen to these characters.
I do want to say that we also liked Elodie Young, who played the God of Love.
Okay. Yeah.
And she's in Daredevil now, so you might know her from that. She's also in G.I. Joe. But yeah, she doesn't have that much to do, but when she shows up, she's charismatic, and she
lands the jokes.
There's a few
yeah.
jokes in this, but it's like, it's painful, because when Brendan Thwaites has a joke, it just happens, and then no one in the theater responded.
And as much as I like Jamie Lannister, this is not his role.
No.
Like, his jokes don't land, and we know he can be funny and
yeah.
witty, because he does it on Game of Thrones. That's
it's
like what he
well,
strange.
But is there anything to him beyond Game of Thrones? Because I certainly haven't really seen it yet.
You know, no, if you watch his Norwegian movies, they're good. Headhunters is great.
I haven't seen Headhunters,
but
I'll give you that.
That's kind of the problem.
Great.
In American movies, I don't know if we don't know what to do with him, or if he just gets directors that are just useless, but like, this basically feels like a Lannister ripoff, because again, he plays like a cocky prince character who has it made in the shade until a horrible thing like cripples him, and then he has to like man up and overcome his weaknesses, and so it's the same fucking plot, but we've seen it on Game of Thrones where it was more interesting and he had more to do, and in this he's for some reason wearing an eye patch and 40 feet tall. I don't understand.
I feel like all of us talking about how weird it is keeps making it sound like a more fun movie
no,
than it is.
It's not.
The
That's
only
the
part
ever.
Of this movie for me that was so bad it was good was the Jeffrey Rush stuff.
Oh, Space
like
Pope.
He
is a flaming Space Pope.
He is,
as if
he
is on
Space
fire.
Pope riding a space boat that has like
that attracts
a river around it.
A gold river.
Yeah, a gold river, and it's got like superpowers, the
yeah,
water in
yeah.
the river. The water in the river.
Though we never really understand
and
what the water
he
does.
He gets like engulfed in flames and can like harness the power of this.
He does
and
like
shoot
the fear chestnut and it makes him even bigger than all the other gods, and then he gets set on fire and it makes him powerful. It's so confusing. Like, it happened, and the first thing I thought of was Futurama Space Pope.
It's
where they're like, oh, Space Pope.
Some of his visual effects were just the worst, too, where it's like.
They were like sci-fi movie.
It's like his
sci-fi
face film,
channel
like,
shit.
Yeah,
surrounded
yeah.
in and, like, CGI, like, blurriness, like, where it looks like he's just, like, God coming out of the sky. It's awful.
Yeah, that was, like,
Sharknado level.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Effects. And
that's
the other thing.
Bad.
The special effects in this are so clearly visual effects that it feels like you're watching a video game. The action scenes all do that thing in video games where when you pull off a special move and it slows down and changes camera angle for you. Like, it does that again and
well,
again. I'm like, I could just be playing a video
the
game.
The bigger problem with that is it's not consistent. Like, for example, the waterfall sequence, there were shots that looked like they came out of a video game, but then they would cut to a shot that looked very photoreal. So that just kind of, it doesn't match, and it makes the video game shit look even worse than maybe it would be if the whole thing was done that way.
So do we think the problem is that this needed to, like, commit more to, like, or maybe pick a tone?
This had to be
like what do
like
we think
zanier and more over the top. This had no chance in hell of being good, so it just needed to be really, really bad that it was fun and it wasn't.
I just wanted it to embrace the lunacy, because there's so much nut stuff in here, but then the tone of the film treats itself so seriously, and you just want to be like, have
except
you
for the
watched
dialogue?
Yourself?
Bizarrely.
It's so bizarre.
I don't know.
And it makes me sad because the director is the director of The Crow and Dark City, and he used to make really great movies. Oh, but he did bring Rufus Sewell back, and I love Rufus Sewell. Like,
I heard he stepped on screen.
He's great. He's great as a villain. He's great as this villain. I enjoy him playing a stuck-up douchebag, whether it's Knight's Tale or this or anything else that he's been a bad guy, and I'm on board. So that I liked. But that's kind of the thing. I like Rufus Sewell. I like Elodie Young. I like Chadwick Boseman. There's not enough here for me to actually recommend you sitting through 2 hours and 7 minutes of this movie.
I don't recommend it at all, but I do recommend keeping an eye out for when, like, certain scenes pop up online and we get certain, like, gifts and stuff. Then you can enjoy this movie.
Yeah, I think gifts are probably the ideal way to enjoy this movie. Gifts and a clip of, like, the 10 minutes that Chadwick Boseman is in.
Yeah, that about sums it up.
That makes
me
excited for Black Panther.
Yeah, me too.
All right, there was a takeaway from this. Now we're on to our next movie, which is Eddie the Eagle, and here is the IMDb synopsis. The story of Eddie Edwards, the notoriously tenacious British underdog ski jumper who charmed the world at the 1988 Winter Olympics. Yeah, that's pretty good. This movie takes place during the same Olympics that Cool Runnings takes place, and I grew up obsessed with Cool Runnings.
It was funny, though, because Angie didn't know that, so during the movie when they mentioned the Jamaican bobsled team, Angie goes, what the fuck was happening at this Olympics?
Shared universe movie, I want to see them all come, but, like, I was obsessed with that movie, and this, to me, had a very similar feel, and I adored it. I mean, I was smiling ear to ear from start to finish. I did not stand up and cheer, but I wanted to stand up and cheer.
Perry's quoted in the trailer.
I wanted to.
No, but you know what? I wasn't going to see this movie because it seemed, frankly, silly to me, and I didn't understand the Taron Egerton, or, like, jutting his chin out thing, which I still don't get. I was like, what is he doing?
Have you seen interviews with the real guy?
Yes, but it feels like one of our friend Jason Bailey said that it feels like in movies where they're like, we'll put the pretty girl in glasses and a ponytail and no one will think she's pretty. Like, that's what it feels like. They took this handsome guy and they're like, we'll put a crap mustache, big glasses, and make him jut his chin out like they did with Channing Tatum.
I'll also say that I've run out of patience for when people act like the biopic actor has to look and act exactly like the original guy, because it's either you need to do a really good job so it's seamless, or just don't do it, because
otherwise it's distracting.
The fact that that's what the guy, like, looks like in real life doesn't make it a better performance. But we're getting off track, because this is actually a pretty good movie.
But because of that stuff, I didn't want to see the movie, because I thought it looked hokey. And then Perry was so enthusiastic about it that Angie and I caved and decided to go see it. And we had an amazing time. It is a totally color-by-the-numbers movie. Like, if you've ever seen a movie about an underdog in a sports movie, it is that movie. However, it knows that, so it runs through those beats really quickly. Like, it runs through the beats of, like, he's always wanted to do this since he was a child who had, like, a big thing on his leg, like from Forrest Gump, the brace or whatever. And then they're like, and his dad didn't believe in him, but his mom did, and all that stuff's there, and they go through it really quickly, which actually makes it fun and, like, well-paced. And then, like, we get to the stuff with Hugh Jackman, and Taron is good in this, but when he gets with Hugh Jackman, like, it's so much fun to watch Hugh Jackman be an American asshole in this movie. Like, he was a ski jumper, but he, like, threw it all away because booze.
I did feel like he was plucked right out of Real Steel, but I was fine with that because I loved him in that movie.
I
have
not seen Real Steel,
and
I actually wondered, because I was like, this reminds me of the trailers from that movie.
He felt
Real
Steel
to me.
Real Steel is good fun. If you liked the vibe of this movie, you'd probably have a good time with that.
I did say on Twitter that I enjoyed this movie so much that, like, I'm forgiving Hugh Jackman for Pan and Chappie, so.
That's a lot.
Yeah, and it's all because of, there is one scene, but this is not a spoiler, it's just bonkers. I'm calling it the one Harry Met Sally scene where he's explaining the perfect way to ski jump as an orgasm. And when we realized what was about to happen, Christy and I clutched each other. We're like, yes, it's happening.
We literally became, we were just like on it.
That scene not only was it like a really funny, well done scene between the two of them, but that scene also makes the rest of the movie much better because unlike, I'm going to throw Race under the bus. Unlike Race, where it's like, he trained super hard and he could run in the Olympics, this actually breaks down, because like, who the hell knows how to ski jump, you know?
Yeah.
This breaks down what it takes to ski jump, so it hits a point where it's not just about him sticking the landing. You start to watch other parts of his jump, and that makes one jump after the next more and more thrilling.
And also, in a way that Race failed, this movie, I actually understood and felt the risk of what he was doing. And I'm not saying, The races happened so quickly that you're like, oh, I guess that was exciting, I don't know. And in this, like, Angie and I literally kept groaning because they take you up to the top of these jumps, which are 70 meters, 90 meters high, and they're like, how far is that? 300 feet. And Angie and I are like, ooh. And I am not particularly afraid of heights, but even in the movie when they show you these heights, you're just like, no.
Well, that
no
speaks to how well all that stuff is shot because, you know, a couple of times in the beginning you get that same shot of, like, you know, the camera up at the ground being like, oh my god, and you think it's going to get old, but then they start to incorporate shots from the top of a ramp. They start to incorporate, you know, POV shots as they're going down the ramp,
and it's very
like a lot of really dynamic stuff.
It's very effective when you're at the top of the ramp and you can see, like, villages away, and you're like, oh my god, and now he's got to put on skis.
And that is a game changer, upping the intensity.
It's really lovely, and I think the movie brings all that together in a really lovely way. My one complaint is that the character are so one-dimensional that there's one point where I just don't believe it anymore, which is with the father character. The whole time he's telling his son, like, just be a plasterer. Like, that's a job. What you're talking about is nonsense and silliness. Just be a plasterer. And I understood his argument for most of the movie. But then his son is in the Olympics and he's still just being like, why don't you just do plastering? I'm like, no, wait, hang on a second. For, like, this week you can support him. And
except
it takes a really long time.
Except for the fact that, like, you have another element that kind of makes a case for him just, like, getting up there and making a fool of himself.
Yes,
no,
but that's not the dad's argument.
It makes sense, you know, in the way that you said, but it doesn't make the dad a consistent or...
No,
well,
no.
It makes him consistent, but it doesn't make him believable.
It makes him a cartoon.
And even
and
the mom is very one
note.
I did
find
her relationship with him
very
and their cat.
Sure.
Like, that just
I mean,
the
that's
whole
the
time.
Thing. It's a live-action cartoon. The characters are incredibly simple, but... I gotta say, I enjoyed it so much, I'm not bothered by that. I'm just more saying to you that be aware of that. If that's something that's really gonna bother you,
I mean,
it's
shamelessly manipulative. The lines are very cheesy. All the characters are one-dimensional, but you kind of, like, you have to go in knowing that that's what it's gonna be, and that it is gonna try its damn hardest to make you feel good about life and inspire you.
And it's also a testament to the performances, too, because, like, the reason those lines are cheesy and effective is because of how they deliver them and how the movie is edited on, like, let's say, Gods of Egypt, where they're like, here's a quippy one-liner, and then it's just poorly.
Yeah,
the
one-liners are really working this. They play in this. I mean, they are corny.
And, like, you know they're coming, but it's still
fun.
What
I thought was funny, so this is set in 1988, and it felt like an 80s movie, in that it's not that complex in the way it treats its comedy characters, but also, like, the music, and not just the diegetic music that's, like, actually from the time, but even, there's just a lot of, like, synth and piano, and it was really wonderful. It reminded me, the music reminded me of Baby Boom, which I don't know if anybody remembers that movie.
No, Baby Boom, Baby Boomer? Boomer?
No, Baby Boomers is a thing. Baby Boom with, was it...
Are we thinking of the same movie?
Where she, like, makes her own baby food?
Yeah, Diane Keaton.
Yes. Yeah, that movie. It reminded me of the music from that, which I was, like, weirdly obsessed with that movie.
I was weirdly obsessed with
that movie. Well, I think it's because she was like,
I've never heard of this
movie. I saw the VHS tape of that movie.
Moving on.
So, but it reminded me of the music that, and I really love that. It really reminded me, it just put me in that space of the 80s in a very effective way. And a lot of times, movies attempt to achieve a feel of an era through exercising the same kind of storytelling. And it feels hokey or too homage or whatever. But in this, it felt really sincere. Like, this felt like a movie from the 80s in a good way.
I will say that one thing about the movie that I did not always love was Taron Egerton's performance, which I know is very cartoony, but it's just, like, he does this thing where he's, like, desperately mugging his face all the time, so he's always like, and I, like, again, I don't know if that's what the real guy was like maybe he was, but I found it
There are
I found
those
it
of us that have that as face. Yes, but it comes naturally to you. It doesn't come naturally to him, and you can tell it feels like someone who's, like, trying really hard to, like, mug for the camera.
I thought that was going to bother me, like, 10 minutes in, and then all of a sudden I found myself getting really used to it.
I got over
it, but
I...
I thought he was so natural in every other respect that it worked well enough.
I think he plays the character really well, but I could have done with, like, the jutting chin thing just destroyed me.
He calms down with it, and I think he calms down with it right when he meets
He does not calm down with it.
I feel like I definitely stopped noticing it that much.
For
me, it was just, like, it was something that I was consistently just, like, it felt like he was just, like, you know, like, when Brenda's, like, it felt like that, where you're just, like, this feels, like, too much right now.
Well,
I just insulted the Godfather, guys.
Oh, God.
Deal with it.
How dare you.
Yeah.
Leave your hate in the comments.
In the
whatever.
Yeah. Baby boom for life.
Well, baby boomers, better than the Godfather, says Chrissy Puchko.
I think you might be right.
You guys keep talking.
I can picture the VHS tape.
Yeah.
And she's, like,
she's
sitting there with the black background.
Yes! I love that we've just discovered we have this in common. That's amazing.
It's a magical moment on Bob Rupert.
Andy's gonna watch this one day and be like, it's not that good. We're gonna be like, you shut your mouth.
Oh.
I'll be like, I mean, it's no Godfather.
It was Baby
Chrissy
Boom.
Will be like,
Baby Boom from 1987 with Diane Keaton and Sam Shepard.
So you're discovering two great movies on this episode, Eddie the Eagle and Baby Boom, and Cool Runnings.
We're discovering Cool Runnings.
We all saw Cool Runnings.
Well, this would make the perfect double feature,
though,
Cool Runnings.
I love that.
I mean it.
Are they from the same studio? Or are they part of the same shared universe now?
Well, Cool Runnings is Disney. This wasn't Disney.
That's very disappointing. But
this feels a tad Disney.
It does feel very Disney.
Well, clearly I adore this movie, and I highly recommend it. I think we need more movies like this in the world. You know, simple, whatever. But it walks out and, like, empowers you and makes you feel wonderful.
It was lovely. I really enjoyed it. I could have stood to have a little more emotional complexity, but I didn't mind exactly. I had a really good time. I was glad I saw it. It was really fun. And, like, hooray for Hugh Jackman.
I mean, I think it was really fun. I think it makes you feel happy. It's not anything complicated. It's a comfort food movie.
Yeah, totally.
Like,
yeah.
It's not like, you're not asking it to do anything new or complicated or edgy. You just kind of go in and then you sit back and you watch Hugh Jackman fake an orgasm and you feel good about your life.
So, there you go.
That's so accurate. Oh, I also just want to say quickly, what's wonderful is that they make that orgasm joke in a way that if you're a kid, you're never going to understand what the fuck they're talking about. So it's actually really safe for children. You know what I mean?
I didn't think about that.
It's
because
they don't say orgasm, that he's, like, saying this thing, and he's saying all this stuff.
I don't know, I feel like you'd probably figure it out because he's talking about making love to a woman.
I feel like kids have a nebulous idea of
what
sex is.
Don't know what an orgasm
joke.
Yes, if you don't understand what sex is, you'll be fine as not understanding this. But if you do, it's really funny. But it's not, like... It's not obscene, that joke.
No.
And then it comes back later in a visual joke that made me laugh.
It's a little obscene, but not too
obscene.
I'm
definitely caught in the middle on that, but...
Anyway.
Alright, anyway.
I watched it with my mom.
Cat in a bowl. I got distracted.
Mark it on your bingo card.
So, pretty much the end of this episode is, don't see Gods of Egypt, go see Eddie the Eagle, Cool Runnings, and Baby Boom. And now that we have that wrapped up... Thank you for watching. That's a wrap on episode 103. You know where you could find us. Go on iTunes, where you can subscribe, rate, comment, and we have our website, popcornprosecco.com. We are on Twitter at popcornprosecco. He's, like, looking into the camera now. Go like us on Facebook, and then all three of us are all over the internet as well. Angie, you want to go first?
Yes, you can find me on Twitter at AJHAN, and I write for slashfilm.com.
Christy?
I'm at Christy Puchko on Twitter, and you can find my career highlights at technicriminals.com.
You can find my writing on glatter.com. My Twitter handle is pnemiroff. This guy's hashtag is Deputy Dewey, and that's it. We'll see you next time.
I'm sorry that the corpses of my parents have inconvenienced you.
Apology accepted.